Ave Maria Radio and Renewal Ministries presents Fire on the Earth, a compelling look at the new evangelization through inspiring teachings, interviews, and testimonies.
Welcome, friends. This is Peter Herbeck, your host. We're here again today with our guest this week, Steve Norman. If you haven't had a chance to hear the program so far this week, Steve works with us at Renewal Ministries. He's part of our team. He's leading an outreach to young men, junior high and high school age boys, and he's doing really a great job. And his wife, beautiful wife Katie, is working with my wife in the Be Love Revolution, at the outreach to young women the same age group. And Steve's been sharing his story of really from the heart of being an atheist at one point, encountering God, dealing with very serious family issues with his own father that he shared on Monday. But I want to encourage you, actually, friends, to go there and listen if you didn't get a chance to, because it was really, really important. But we're now just kind of getting into the deeper part of Steve's story of just how he became really a disciple of the Lord. So welcome back, Steve.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Yeah, so pick up wherever you'd like.
Sure.
You know, so.
Yeah, I think yesterday I was sharing my real true first conversion, let's call this a reversion, because I did grow up Catholic, but to coming back to believing in God was Halloween weekend of 2011 at this Curcio retreat. And it was, again, a quick journey, just only a number of months of going from atheist to agnostic to now believing in God. I remember coming home to that from that retreat, and I was living at home with just my mom at that time and saying, Mom, you know, God is real. And I was just loud, and I was like, you know, my mom, who was a very pragmatic, very calm, cool, collected woman, she's like, okay, take a deep breath, Steve. You know, she just was trying to help me too, but I couldn't. I had this overflowing, this radical shift and change, this metanoia, and I just wanted to figure out more about it. I wanted to, I was hanging out with a lot of my same friends from previous days as an atheist, trying to getting into the wrong different type of things. Still hanging out, those were my friends. But now while we're hanging out, what do you guys think about God? What do you think about this? And I just remember distinctly friends being like, Steve, stop bringing it up. We don't care. We don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
We don't believe. It's just, yeah. And so for me, found myself in this new place, very excited, but I didn't know how to make sense of it. And I didn't know how to operate, right? It's a very new experience. And so I actually had been introduced to a priest when I was an atheist that I used to get together with at a good old Tim Hortons back in Canada. We would debate roughly once a month. And now that I had my reversion, this priest, Father Kenneth, he became more, I remember showing up to the Tim Hortons after my Curcio retreat and saying, all right, Father Ken, listen, I don't want to debate. I'm on your team. Like, just help me.
Yeah.
And Father Ken, I think looking back on it, he had been meeting me now for close to 2 or 3 years.
Wow.
And actually, I want to just pause for a second on him, because a huge part of my conversion, I mentioned my one sister's novena for me, but the reason why I kept going back to Father Kenneth and connecting to my own dad's story, you know, Father Kenneth is about 15, 20 years older than me. He's 6'4". He's very active. He's a very outdoorsy, would go to Alaska to just hike by himself kind of guy. And when we would get together, even though I fundamentally disagreed with him as an atheist, there was something about him I was attracted to and that I desired. This, he exuded this manliness, this confidence. But what I realized looking back on it, what he was doing is he was fathering me. He was giving me something that I didn't necessarily receive, in the way of he wanted to know what I thought. He was pouring into me. He was praying for me. He was encouraging me. He was, there's this thing that I wanted to be poured into as a young man, you know? And so now here I am believing in God, and I'm asking the same to explicitly pour into me. He became my spiritual director, actually, which for me just looked like, how do I get more of God into me?
Yeah.
You know, his encouragement and helping me to form reading scripture. He helped me to see that I was actually, you know, the Christian faith is the great hound of heaven. The story of God comes after us, comes into the human story as a baby. There's no other great religion or great philosophy that talks about the almighty, the divine, the majesty of God coming into the human experience after humans. And for me, that from a philosophical, that made sense with my story, that God was always after me, never to punish me and to condemn me. He just wanted me. And through my sister's prayer and through Father Kenneth, praise be Jesus, that I wanted now to be found by him. And so walking and journeying with Father Kenneth, he actually led a trip to Jerusalem, to the Holy Land, that he had a donor cover my way. He brought me to the Holy Land. And he had asked me to discern about becoming a missionary. He was a religious priest and had some work down in Atlanta, Georgia. And keep in mind, as a Canadian, it was a big ask. And so I remember grappling with this idea of, you know, my mid-20s, leaving my job and becoming a missionary. but it was in the Holy Sepulchre. We got to stay overnight in the Holy Sepulchre through some of his connections and praying and just realizing how generous the Lord was to me, how patient he was with me in my own life. Yeah, he just filled me with like this greater desire to turn around and give that away and to encourage other people. So I said yes, and I was a missionary on college campuses down at UGA and Georgia Tech and different places, a variety of Bible studies and encountering the students there. I just wanted to share with them, not judge them where their own thoughts were, because I was only there just a couple years prior. Yeah. But just to, God willing, be used by the Lord to bring his love and his Father's heart to other people at that age.
So funny, I did some campus ministry too way back here at the University of Michigan for a few years, and same kind of background. Just to ask you, did you realize that Ralph Martin, your boss, was also converted on a Crucio?
I did. We connected on our interview when he was basically said, "So you were born, and then what, Steve?" I brought up Crucio, and you know, we had other overlapping connections. So it was a good first interview, I think. So
yeah. And then were you initially just thinking, okay, I'll go down there and cut my teeth on how to share the gospel with people, but also just discern what God has for me? I don't really know what he has for me and what's going to happen. So
absolutely. I think being a young, you know, mid-20-year-old guy, started going back to church when, after this conversion, a lot of stereotypically elderly women were approaching me, telling me that I was probably going to become a priest, that I probably had a vocation. So this discernment of my vocation was in my mind for sure. And during this missionary year, I lived with priests. And so I was actively discerning the priesthood during that year, as well as doing the work. And what that looked like was, you know, reading a book. We had a little small group, my spiritual director, the conversations. And it was actually after 6 months of this quote unquote active discernment, we were leading a retreat for some kids, and in adoration, I remember hearing this similar voice that I had back in my conversion saying, "Stephen, I love you. I'm not calling you to be a priest." Mm. I remember waking up the next morning thinking, oh, that was a different type of voice. That was a pillar. That was a foundation. That was a solid voice, different from all the other voices I was trying to discern through over those last 6 months. Yeah, I think I was looking not just to give the gospel, but also how do I live this rhythm, this life? And living with a priest for the year, we lived what was called the great silence after night prayer. No more online stuff, no more talking. You go to bed, you wake up, you do your morning holy hour. We had mass, we had breakfast in silence, and then the silence was broken. Not to mention the other prayer rhythms and habits throughout the day. I really saw these men, these priests, wake up at 5 a.m., live this community life and this communion with the Lord, go out into the world and their different apostolates, just trying to help people know Jesus more and encounter him more and love him more, come back home, do more prayer time, and like just live it. That was their life. And they loved it. They were so full of joy. And so that year, my life was a huge gift. You know, here I was thinking I was being generous to the Lord, giving him a year of my life.
Right.
But I came back home from that year and just having lived that experience. And I think I was just kind of craving that reality, this rhythm of life that was centered on the Lord. Mm-hmm. You know, while now I'm working downtown Toronto for a bank at the time. And just how do I now, outside of this missionary, this little beautiful cocoon that I had just lived, how do I bring some of these principles into my day-to-day life? Was now, I guess, my next challenge in my life.
Yeah, living in silence, doesn't it seem like a radical idea when you think about, well, telephones and iPhones and everything? It's just, there's hardly any silence in people's lives these days.
Yeah.
And the Lord wants us to come to the quiet, and there's just a lot of power. There's sanity there too, right? Isn't it? Is it the calmness of soul, of mind?
Yeah, you see the Lord is present in all things, in all ways, desiring to commune. We have a God who desires to connect, created us to commune with him. But it's us who most often are just too distracted and too busy and looking the other way or not listening, right? So yeah, that silence, little doses, and obviously busy family life, grandparent life, working life, life is full and needs to be full of noise at times. But to carve in intentionally that silence, I think is important. And so for me, you know, after that missionary year, like I said, most of my friends I'd stop hanging out with, or they didn't get why I was becoming a missionary. Or so coming back after that year, I kind of approached my local pastor, and we started a youth group. We started a young adult group. Just in my volunteer time, I just wanted, I think, to surround my, I just wanted friends who were about it too. You know, I just wanted to reorient my life and social life. And so bit by bit, that led actually to me getting a job in Canada for a Catholic high school as a campus minister, and just living my life in a tangible way. I guess you can call it in ministry.
Wow, that's really something. your family. Let's just kind of go back to your family for a moment at this stage of your life. What was it like connecting with your siblings, with your dad, with your mom, as you really started living the faith? You were walking in the footsteps of Jesus. You were trying, you know, trying to live the way of the Lord, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's, depending on which family member I'm talking about, with my dad, there was still a lot of healing that needed, and to this day still needs to have happened. But now I'm coming at him as myself, as a Catholic Christian man, as an adult more so, of seeing, you know, him as a man. Chris Norman did his best as he could as a father, and not putting as much on him to, because now I had a direct relationship with God the Father. And I saw my dad, Chris Norman, still is my dad, but in a different lens. Whereas two of my three sisters are atheists and still are non-believers. And so, you know, a lot of Christmases and Easters and Thanksgiving dinners and any family socials, just trying to find ways to poke and prod and find out what they believe and why they believe. And realizing, getting to a point, sometimes it's better just to let things lay low and build a relationship on other things at times. But my one sister, who had prayed for me and is still faithful to this day, her and I are extremely close. You know, I'm godfather to her three kids, along with my wife as godmother. She married a Catholic man. And so our families can connect and can relate on a much deeper, personal, intimate way. So yeah, definitely love my family across the board. Love my dad, love my mom, my sisters. But the degree of our closeness just varies based on what we can share.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you said you entered into the Catholic school world.
Yeah.
There. What was that like, ironically, being back there in that environment and actually trying to make an impact? What were you facing? How did God use you? What did you learn?
Yeah, I found on the school level, on the ground level with teachers, I had a great principal. I deeply respect Humberto. My principal was just a man of faith and very gifted to lead a school, an institution. And on the local level, it was great. The students had questions and some people just wrote me off as, you know, I'm the high school campus minister, I don't care. But then I would get connected through ping pong and coaching sports, and they would see me in other lights and start coming around to my office and just having life conversations with them. It was we call them school boards on the district level in the school, that was full of a lot of agendas, a lot of political, governmental, like I said, publicly funded Catholic education. Comes with this, I just remember getting paid to go on my first conference. I was getting paid to go my first overnight conference. I was all excited. This fun part of the job. 400 people gathering to listen to this priest they brought from Ireland and a sister, a religious sister from, I believe, Pennsylvania. So, and I quickly realized I was sent to this conference, this Catholic priest was promoting that hell does not exist. It's a psychological state. This religious sister was suggesting that abortion's okay in some circumstances. And I quickly realized the board aligned with certain views that weren't actually aligned with the Catholic Church. And that's where I found it challenging as a low man on the totem pole. How do you operate as a faithful disciple within a hierarchy that isn't necessarily aligned with what the church teaches? So it had its challenges, but looking back on it, it was a gift.
Yeah, wonderful. Can you be with us again tomorrow?
I
don't want to put you on the spot.
You're my boss. I have to say yes, so for sure,
right,
I will.
Right. Well, friends, I hope you enjoyed the time we've had with Steve. We're going to continue tomorrow. Just go a little bit deeper. The Lord is present. He's alive. He knows each and every one of us. And as Steve was sharing, just the journey over time and over years and the little ways in which the Lord began to speak to him, and in ways that were a little bit more dramatic because people were praying for him and the Lord reached out. The Lord is the hound of heaven, and parents out there who are praying for your children, don't give up. Those prayers matter, and the Lord's going to use them to bring your children back to him. So God bless you. Hope you can join us tomorrow.
Each program of Fire on the Earth with Peter Herbeck can be downloaded at AveMariaRadio.net and RenewalMinistries.net. Fire on the Earth is a production of Ave Maria Radio.
Friends, I'd like to offer you my new booklet, Does God Judge? Wow, what a question, but it's a relevant question. Scripture says we were all appointed to die once and then the judgment. We know for sure each one of us has an appointment in our future. And it takes Scripture, Catechism, and the saints to help us understand the beauty of God's plan and how we can look forward to the judgment as followers of Christ. If you'd like to get a free copy, call 1-800-282-4789 or visit renewalministries.net/FOE.